Hello, everyone. My presentation is on a unit testing made simple. Oh, I'm going to turn my... I can't be listening to myself with the delay. Okay, sorry about the background noise. I couldn't find a microphone that didn't have a delay. So since I don't really participate in BicWrite and not at the conference, just briefly introduce myself. I work full-time as a quality assurance engineer. I'm also a part-time master's student, and my biggest qualification is that Christoph asked, and apparently I can't say no to him. So when I first started working professionally as a software developer, people would ask me, oh, what do you do? And I'd say, I'm a software developer. And they'd say, oh, that's very complicated. I can't understand anything about that. So I'd explain it. Well, I do two things. First, I have to figure out what the business people want, or need, rather, this computer to do. And then I have to make the computer do that. When I first started working, I thought I'd be spending most of my time doing number two, making the computer do that. And I realized pretty quickly that most of the problems in business software world is actually dealing with the humans. So eventually, because it's mostly dealing with the humans, the problems are, I moved to quality assurance. And now it's more complicated when people ask me, so what does it mean that you're a quality assurance engineer? Because first I have to make sure still that the business people know what they need the computer to do. The programmers know what the business people need the computer to do. And then finally, that the computer actually does that. So how do we know that the computer actually does that? There are two kinds of dynamic verification. There's also static. We're going to pretend that that doesn't exist. The first is manual testing. Programmers do this when you're working on the code. You run the program, you see what it does. And also, business world, someone else is probably going to be testing it after you. This is boring. It's expensive because you have to have humans doing it. And hopefully you really only have to do this thoroughly once. The alternative to manual testing is automated testing. You're using computers to do things in automatic ways, so you might as well take advantage of that for testing. This has the advantage of being cheap and quick, because it appears doing that. And because it's quick and cheap, hopefully you can do it frequently. So there's multiple kinds of automated tests, and the testing pyramid is a model for talking about that. At the bottom, what we're talking about mostly today are unit tests. These tests are going to be the fastest to run, hopefully, and the most isolated. At the top, we have UI tests, for example. These would be tests that go through the whole code. I need to turn off chat so you're not, or the IRC so you're not distracting me. Okay, and in the middle we have integration tests. So example of this might be something that instead of going through the user interface GUI, it might use a database. What am I doing? This is strange, not seeing anyone or getting any feedback, but I'll continue on. So like all automated tests, with unit tests, we get confidence when we're changing the implementation, and it's easily repeatable. In a unit test in particular, compared to integration tests or UI tests, they're more helpful when they fail because we're just testing one little piece of thing so we can find bugs earlier. And also they can cause the programmer when they're doing the coding initially to improve what they're doing by making it more modular and can also serve to document the code. And the end goal is that it ends up giving you a more reliable implementation. So let's start with a little example. Let's pretend that we need a function is on, and this is gives you, you give it a number and it outputs true. If your input is odd and if your input is even, it tells you false. So test-driven development is a methodology, and I don't think we're a big fan of methodologies, but I'll use an example. In a nutshell, it's basically you design the tests first and then you do the coding. You don't always need to be doing this, but it's helpful for thinking about what tests you should write, making sure that what your code you're writing is testable. So let's define an example of function assert. You give it the input and expected value. If the actual output is what you expect, then that test passes. If it's not, it fails. So I gave a few test cases, negative value, zero, and then an odd value and an even value. And one of the things in test-driven development is you usually have a stub implementation just to begin. If you're using a language that throws exceptions, for example, you might have it throw an exception, not implemented. Here, though, I'm just going to have isOdd always return false. So when you run the tests with the stub implementation, some of them are going to pass and some of them are going to fail. So I'm going to continue implementing. I think oddness and evenness has something to do with division by 2. So let's do the number divided by 2 and the remainder is 0. I think that's odd. So then run the tests and well, they all fail. So that tells me either my tests are wrong, which I don't think so, because I think I remember enough about math to know that, or my implementation is wrong. And it turns out that my implementation is wrong. So let's fix the implementation. So it's the number divided by 2. If the remainder is 1, then the number is odd. And then we run the tests again, and whoa, it looks like they all pass. So that's much better. So if I've convinced you that unit testing is helpful, where do you go from there? So then we bring out another nice bad word that we don't like, framework. You find a framework for testing. If you're using code that already has a testing framework, you're probably going to just use that. It's probably good enough. If it's not already in use, you're going to have to find one. Easiest thing to do is unit test framework. Programming languages through a web search. Some are well known, like JUnit is for Java. It's probably, it might not be the most popular now, but it made unit testing popular again. And if you can't find anything, well, then you're going to have to roll your own. This is probably the biggest hurdle in unit testing, is finding the framework and getting it all set up. Because, like, show you with the example, it's pretty easy to write a unit test. So when can you write a unit test? You can write unit tests all the time. You can write one when you're at a completely new project, when you're adding features, or when you're refactoring. And as a special case for refactoring, probably the best time to be writing unit tests is when you're fixing bugs. You can write the test, and the first time you run it, before you fix the bug, it's going to fail. and then you can fix the bug, and then your test should pass. So this gives you confidence that first, that your test actually works. And then it gives you confidence that your fix actually works. So you can be writing tests all the time. Examples of what you want to test is the happy path. So these are what you expect as input, what you expect your users to be doing. And also, opposite of happy path, sad path, input that cause error. When I'm manually testing things and I intentionally do something stupid and the program does something stupid, the program will usually say, well, don't do that then. Well, if you want someone else to be using your software, they're going to be doing stupid things. So you want to be catching that as soon as possible. Boundary conditions are also a place to test. For example, for even oddness, zero is like a boundary condition. So I had zero and I had a value on the negative side and a few values on the positive side. At least when I think about even oddness, positive numbers are more important. So I had more tests on the positive side. And as I said before, bug fixes. These are the perfect opportunities to be adding unit tests, because you know you have found an example where there is something wrong with the code, and the unit tests are a tool to help you fix it right there, make sure you're fixing it, and to make sure that it doesn't get broken again in that exact way. So how do you know that your test is good? Just keep it simple. Your test should be simple. You're just trying to do one thing at a time. And like I was talking with the bugs, if your test should actually tell you something. If the code is wrong, your test should fail. If your code is right, your test should pass. And a characteristic of unit tests as opposed to the integration tests, and sometimes there's a little squishy what the difference is. The pyramid is just a model. But unit tests should be independent of each other. Sometimes you'll have a setup that's common to a series of unit tests, but it shouldn't matter which order they get run in. Now, what's an example of unit tests that aren't so good? If they're not useful, so if they're complicated, or they're trying to do multiple things, they might be useful tests, they might be good integration tests, but they're not good unit tests. So you can usually use the same framework for unit testing, for integration tests. You might keep the tests, but put them somewhere else, might not run them as frequently as unit tests. Unit tests aren't helpful if they're not reliable. It's not obvious an example I use, but sometimes you can have tests that sometimes they pass, sometimes they fail. I spend most of my time implementing UI tests, which are sometimes very unreliable and for no apparent reason. Another danger is if your unit tests are defining the implementation. Do you want to be testing the behavior of your code and not every little detail? Example, if you have a program that includes a sorting algorithm, you just want to be testing that it sorts correctly, not that you're using a particular sorting algorithm. So that's just a brief overview of things that you could probably keep in your head. Unit testing is more of an art than a science. So this is a fairly short article that they did a literature review, academic literature, and also practitioner literature. And they tried to just boil it down into a few principles. And the few principles that they came up to were 16. So that not just a few, but they also gave metrics. Even if you're not keeping them as numbers in a log, they can be helpful to think about. I also gave some smells for tests. Any questions? Do I give this back to you, Twin Christoph? I see that there's some tests and questions in the IRC channel. Okay.